Well, welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, to the Don and Wynn Show. We're happy to be here this beautiful New Year's Eve. Thank you all for listening. I have my co-host, Wynn Free, on the line with us. How are you doing tonight, Wynn?
Am I really here?
You're really here, and it's really happening.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, you just wake up, or were you taking a nap?
No. I'm bright and cheery.
Oh, excellent.
I'm contemplative.
Contemplative.
Yeah.
And what does that mean to you?
It means I'm just kind of mulling things over.
Mulling things over?
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Things over. You know, had a. You know what? I get emails during the week and conversations, and people say things that I think about. You know how somebody says one little thing, and it kind of dwells in your mind?
Yeah.
For example, I spoke to Jean-Claude today, and he said, "You guys are a great team." Let me see. He said, "Don is really laid back." And what was the word he used?
High strung for you?
Huh?
Did he say high strung for Winfrey?
High strung? No, he didn't use the word high strung. Something like that. I forget what it was. But between the two of us, we have a chemistry, right?
Well, that's right. And a little biology, a little bit of history, and a little bit of everything, I think.
Right, right.
You know, I've been. This has been a strange New Year's for me, folks. I've. You know, you'd think when you get to a certain point, good things continue to unfold. But this morning, I had a really, really, I guess, bad thing happen. And one of my hard drives. I woke up this morning, and. Turned on my computer, tried to access one of the hard drives with all, and I mean all, the audio files, originals, of all the shows since day one, and it wouldn't access it. And it kept saying, "Would you like to format your drive?" Parameters here, incorrect. "Would you like to format your drive?" No data on drive. I'm thinking, how can that happen? I turned the thing off yesterday, it was working, and this morning it's not. And, but I didn't turn the external hard drive off. I just turned the computer off. So something happened that messed it up since today. And I'm thinking, oh, boy, you know, all these audio files that were archived onto that, you know, it was my archive hard drive for all those original audio files. Now I have backups of all the completed filtered files, which, of course, are on the website, but not the original data disk, nor any of the original information sent to me by any of the show hosts. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, what a wonderful December 31st.
Now, how could that happen, Don?
I don't know. Sometimes I took it down to a specialist. Well, a specialist that works in a computer store, of course, not a real hard drive recovery specialist, but just a regular techie who works at one of the CompUSA's, Fry's Electronics type places. And they tried to run, you know, tried to open it up and run it through the mill a little bit. And they said, darn thing went bad. It's happened to us. It's happened to you. And there's no information on it. And I said, well, how do you know there's no information? Well, because if it says you've got to reformat the hard drive, then it's wiped. And I said, well, that's not true at all from my understanding. It's probably that it just won't somehow access the hard drive. And it's saying incorrect parameters. Would you like to format the hard drive? So the data's still there. And so I said, I don't think I'm going to leave this with you guys.
They don't seem like the right guys. Huh?
No. So I parted out the external hard drive, took all the cover and casing off of it and the plugs, and I'm left with this bare-bones hard drive, which I'm going to try to stick into a computer and see if I can access it as an internal. But if that doesn't work, then I'm just going to ship it off and see what a specialist can do.
You know, since I started this project of, I guess it was the first thing was writing the book,
hey.
I have noticed a pattern that if I share the pattern with some people, it'll sound like I'm paranoid. But I am fairly clear that there are forces to pay attention to this stuff, especially when it's transformative. Forces in other dimensions that screw things up.
I tend to agree with you
and
on that.
One of the ways they do it is through electrical things.
Electronics, that's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can tell you there were probably two times that I was going to do an interview that the radio transmitter went down when the interview was supposed to happen. Now, radio transmitters never go down, do they?
Well,
never heard of it.
You know how often that happened with you and I, remember, when we originally started?
What happened?
How all the problems just kept coming and we could never find them?
Yeah. And, you know, I learned that it's like a test to see if you can endure. You know, there were other times in my life when I was younger when I would have obstacles and I'd give up and I'd say something like, well, this isn't supposed to happen, and move on, and I would lose a great opportunity to do something.
Yeah, well...
Lately, I realized that one has to be very hard-nosed and keep pushing, no matter what the obstacle is, when you believe in what you're doing.
I agree.
Because there will be obstacles.
There will be, and you know, it's the only shame of it is, and I don't mind these things happening. I mean, I'm pretty, you all right?
That's what I get for drinking coffee.
You need a cigarette?
Coffee.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I'll tell you, I don't mind that these things happen, and you know, these failures and things happen quite regularly. You know, even like our phone line, the call-in line's constantly having problems. I've had techies out four times from the phone company inside and outside my place. They keep telling me nothing's wrong, and as soon as they leave, everything goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's happened so often, now I just laugh about it and let the problem occur, because obviously no one's around to fix it, and they've tried and tried and tried, and they keep telling me nothing's wrong, but I know something's wrong, especially when you hear the weirdest things and voices and noises coming through. And but when something like this hard drive occurs, I don't mind it affecting me and putting a little more work on me, but when it affects all the show hosts, mm-hmm. and all their files, then it really gets in the way, then it hurts them. And that bothers me, because then, you know, I mean, I have a difficult time explaining to them what happened, and then, you know, they're kind of worried, what's wrong, can I get these original audio files in 24-bit so that I can sell them, and then I don't have them, and I can't put them on CD for them, and that bothers me, because it hurts others.
Are the audio files up on the archive?
Well, yeah, but remember, I have 2 weeks of shows that I haven't posted. And if I can recover some of those that I, from one computer to the other, I'll be able to. Otherwise, they're all gone.
Mm-hmm.
Any of the new shows from the 18th to now, or whenever the last one I posted,
mm-hmm.
and any and all of the original recordings from day one, since August 1st, mm-hmm. all gone. Yeah.
This is the first time we've done a show by ourselves for a few weeks now.
That's right.
You know, you notice it has a different tone to it.
It does. You're mean.
I'm mean?
You're very mean.
I'm not mean today.
But I like you.
Huh? Do I seem mean today?
No. I love you, Wynn. But you're mean.
But you know what? I am not mean. I really am not. I'm like, if anyone becomes my friend, I am like the world's best.
No, that's right. You're like a cat with milk.
It's hard to become a friend, because it's like I got all these, how can I say it? I won't say barriers, but, you know, obstacle courses. But good friends are really hard to find. really good friends. I mean, there's a lot of people that have acquaintances and people that they have business associations with and common interests. And, you know, you and I kind of, I think, went through a hurdle this week.
We've went through a few of them, Wynn.
A few of them.
For the audience that doesn't know, let me tell you, we, sometimes between shows, Wynn and I get on the phone to each other, and then we have something that's, let's say, taking place or meetings or something we have to do or catch up on, and then we'll both attack it from a different angle, and we'll both be coming with a completely different answer to a situation, and it gets lively.
Yeah, we're both being covered, aren't we?
Yeah, well, it gets lively because, you know, I think that, everybody and all the painters in a room are going to paint the room differently from their own perspective. And you and I have two unique perspectives on how we see things. And the beautiful thing is, at the end of every time we discuss things, we always find common ground.
Well, you know,
and it flourishes.
Right. You know, I think I have this criteria. You know, I've figured out ways of looking at things. Sometimes they're different than other people. And I have this idea. There's relationships of obligation and relationships of grace. And each of us is involved. Of course, you can't go through life without having relationships of obligation. I mean, if you have an apartment, you have a relationship of obligation with your landlord. If you have a job, you have a relationship of obligation with your boss. And he has a relationship of obligation to you. In fact, the landlord does, too. It goes two ways. So, you know, there's no way to go through life without having relationships of obligation. And for a lot of people, they end up having most of the relationships of obligation. Now, you know, it gets more subtle when you get into friendship. Because with friendship, it's like, well, I'll do him a favor, and then he'll owe me a favor. Now, in a sense, that's really a relationship of obligation, isn't it? Or with a married couple. I'll bring home the money, and she'll give me sex. That's another relationship of obligation. So it's easy to take a look at every relationship in your life and say, where is the grace? Is there grace? Because relationships of grace are really precious and sacred. And keeping them in grace, keeping on them on that level, is really a challenge. Because it's human nature, and it's what we're so familiar with, to go to relationships of obligation. Does that make sense to you?
Not at all.
No,
it doesn't.
That's why we're on the show, right?
Yeah. No, I think I would look at the situation completely different. I wouldn't, I mean, I don't look at any relationship as a relationship of obligation at all. I just, that's not even how I would think.
Well, for example, if you're renting an apartment, how can you not have a relationship of obligation with your landlord?
Well, see, I don't to categorize a relationship.
Now you can take a relationship of obligation, like a lord-tenant relationship, for example, and you can transform it. But its basic inherent thing is an exchange, and an exchange is at least the way that I'm talking about it. An exchange is a relationship of obligation.
Yeah, well, I makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
how are you getting through life without having relationships of obligation?
I just, they may very well be relationships of obligation. I just don't think of it in that terms.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't make them bad. It doesn't, you know, it's not a negative to have a relationship of obligation. It isn't. I mean,
I think a person can have a relationship of obligation with themselves.
Well,
with the way you're expressing it,
they could. You know what? They could have. How could they have? How would a person have a relationship of obligation with themselves?
Well, I guess if you run 20 miles, you can have this candy bar.
You make that like a motivation, right?
Yeah, but I think again, it's an obligation, isn't it?
Let's put it this way.
So when? Run 20 miles.
Forget it. You can change your agreement, though. You made it to yourself, so you can change your agreement at any moment. Say, okay, forget it. I'm only going to run 10 miles because my legs are too tired. You know, you don't have an
obligation. Then you didn't fulfill your obligation to yourself.
Well, you might be disappointed, but it's still, say, in terms of agreement with other people, when you have a relationship of obligation, you can't change an agreement by yourself. You have to go to the other person and change the agreement. For example, we've agreed to do this show tonight, right?
We did, and I forget what we were the topic was going to be about.
Yeah, well,
do you remember?
We'll come up with it.
No, you mentioned a topic originally, remember?
Yeah, but
that's a lot of buts.
If I decided not to do the show,
right,
and I didn't call you,
mm-hmm,
I would have broken my obligation because there's a level of obligation.
Yeah, well, that's all right. I had people coming to your door.
You did?
Yeah, two big guys.
I didn't show up.
Mm, you called me just in time.
Well, this is how it happens in the lower world. Hey, man, you're obligated. You don't do it.
That's right.
How do you think the negative forces control everything? They do it by creating obligations. They run people into debt.
Well, that's right. That's why you don't want to look at a relationship as an obligatory relationship. Is that a good word, obligatory? I don't know. Does that audience, help me out here? Obligatory. Does it fit?
Well, obligatory, I think it fits. Obligatory is connected to the word obligation.
I think so, but it sounds so much like obligatory, doesn't it?
Yeah, but
did I just make a new word up? Obligatory.
The point is that whether you look at it a certain way or not, it is that. I mean, I disagree here because.
Sure, you can look at it any way you want. It's all about perspective anyways.
Well, it is a relationship of obligation. I mean, go to the most fundamental one, which is your landlord.
All right, is a relationship of lesson a relationship of obligation?
Is a relationship what?
Of lesson. A relationship of obligation.
A relationship of, I don't get.
Yeah, if there's a lesson to be learned in a relationship, does that make it a relationship of obligation? Yes, no.
If there's a lesson to be learned?
To be learned in a relationship, does that make a relationship of obligation?
Well.
You know what? Yes, no.
Don't tell me yes, no. I'll answer the way I want.
Because if not, then I think it's a mute point, because all relationships are relationships of where there are lessons to be learned. It's like using its words. Words, when we use words, when those words are very, they play a very heavy psychological effect on us. They have a very psychological impact on us. Words, symbols, and that's how people are controlled. And they're controlled every day by the powers that be through the use and the manipulation of words and symbols, which then transforms our thought patterns into a very egoistic pattern, and we start to separate, segregate. We look at everything as an obligation, a toil, a job, something that is to get through, like you were saying, an obstacle. And then we always look at everything as something that has to be solved, a riddle, a puzzle, a problem. And I don't buy for that. I just don't buy into it. I'm sorry.
Well, I have a point I'm trying to make. Because, obviously, what you're saying is true. But, inherently, human nature, human condition, people bind themselves into matrices and into realities.
Then they got to break out of them, don't they?
They can't bust out of it. And busting out of it is not easy. So the criteria that I'm describing is a way of looking at the way you're bound into a matrix. And I'm trying to lead to the point where I can say, if you can see that that's true for you, here are the tools to get out of it, to get out of that binding.
True.
To me, these relationships, I mean, whether you like it or not, you can't not have. Now, I think what you're doing is, because I'm using the word obligation, it pushes a button in you. And you don't ever want to feel that you're obligated. So you're resisting the whole idea. But whether you...
Wow, you just threw a whole definition into how I understand and conceive of this situation.
Well, am I wrong?
Yes.
I am?
Yeah.
Well, tell me how I'm wrong.
See, when I say I put aside obligation, it's not because I don't think of it, and it's not because it pushes my button. It's a choice. It's a choice to see things in a different way. It may not be a better way. It's another way. And
but are you telling me you're not obligated to your landlord, that you don't have to pay your rent every month?
Well, I think we have responsibilities and obligations, absolutely.
Okay, well, that's a relationship. Your relationship, what I'm trying to say is your relationship to your landlord is a relationship of obligation. And there's nothing wrong with it.
Well, no, I don't see anything wrong with that at all.
No,
I just wouldn't perceive of the relationship in that fashion.
The what?
Like I said, you very well could be right. I mean, it makes sense to me. I just wouldn't perceive of it in that fashion.
Well, you know, the deal is, to me, the relationship with your landlord is very obviously, and I don't think you can argue with it.
You got a hot-looking landlord, don't you?
A relationship of obligation, okay?
You don't. You admit it.
I don't have a hot.
You don't have a sexy-looking landlord?
No.
No?
Well, I might.
Well, see, there now I'm starting to get the picture.
No.
You've been fighting with this for a while, haven't you?
Your relationship with your landlord. John, you're not going to let me make my point. Your relationship with your landlord is obviously, for to me anyway, a relationship of obligation. Now, you could change it. You could change it. You know how you would change it? You would see your landlord, and you'd look into him and love the guy on a spiritual level.
Sure.
You would get it.
Or pay him off early.
And then suddenly, even though you have that relationship of obligation, there's another level that you've created with your landlord. It's like these relationships of obligation are the things that tie people into matrices. And not necessarily a relationship with your landlord is tying you into a matrix. I mean, the bottom line is, if you have a relationship of obligation and he fulfills his obligation and you fulfill your obligation, everything kind of nulls out and it goes to zero. In other words, it's not there in your face all the time because you paid your rent. And it's not in his face because he provided you a good place to live. So it's finished.
And took your money.
He took your money. I mean, any relationship of obligation can be balanced where whether it's an overt agreement like with a landlord or a more subtle agreement with a wife, and then you know, it's like people make these subtle agreements. They have this expectation. I'm going to do this, and you're going to do that, and I'm going to do this. And you know what? If both people fulfill the agreement, the relationship works. But the deal is, we're all looking for magic. We want magic. We want to feel that special, sacred feeling with people. And it's very hard to feel that in a relationship of obligation. So now you have to change the nature of the relationship somehow. How do you change the nature of a relationship?
See, I tend to agree with what you're saying here. I think if a relationship is in a way that you feel obligated, or that you feel codependent, or are codependent in that relationship, sure, I think that relationship becomes one of how would you say special? That relationship turns into a special relationship, mm-hmm. And when really you should, I mean, a special relationship to me is not a great way to look at it. I think all relationships should be what am I trying to say? It's
well, your ideal is that all relationships should be special.
Well, I think that all relationships should be holy. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should look at one relationship as special and one relationship as not. I think
now,
you've got to turn that around.
Now, let me say, I'm going to like tear your vocabulary apart. Okay?
Okay. Was it the word holy?
No, it was the word should.
Oh, should.
When you say
that's a bad word.
When you say the word should, it automatically causes you to judge yourself, you know, because then you say, oh, my relationship should be holy, and it's not. So you're left with judging yourself, right?
That's
not
true.
Making the grade.
Sure.
So should is not the best word. Maybe I would say that it would be optimum to have all our relationships sacred.
Correct.
Right?
Very true.
Like a positive goal. And you see, people all wonder, what are they supposed to do? Our world's breaking down. We know the world's breaking down. We know, we expect, there's all these interdimensional communications that have been saying that we're going to go through rocky times. There's indications without interdimensional communication, without that stuff, that things are breaking down. And it's like, what that does is bring up fear. Like, what am I going to do? And you know what? You have all these relationships of obligation. Suddenly you can't pay your rent and you're homeless. Suddenly you can't bring home the bacon and you're wifeless. You know, how do you start right now, not waiting for things to happen? And if, you know, when I say those things, I don't wish and hope, and I don't even want to prophesy that those things are going to happen. But just in case they do, when do we start fix our relationships and making them sacred? You wait until that's happening? I don't think so. Because if that does start to happen, it could very well be harder to do it, because then everyone, you're desperate. You know, when you're desperate, now let me say this, because I have a long period of my life when I've been desperate, okay? I know what desperateness feels like. And even when I didn't feel desperate, my circumstances were desperate. You know, I know that when you're desperate, people shy away from you. They're afraid to get involved with you. They're afraid of what kind of responsibility they might have if they take you on as their friend. So, you know, the time to start making relationships sacred is before you're desperate, when you're still functional, because then in a sacred relationship.
And how would you go about that? How do you go about making a relationship sacred?
Well, you know, the first thing you do is create the vision that it's possible. You create the idea that it is possible to change all your relationships, or many of them, to be at a higher octave. And
I agree with you. Just what would be some steps that people, our listeners, could take that would change many of the relationships in their lives to be one that are to ones that are sacred?
Are you agreeing with me now?
Well, I agree that relationships should that it's optimal that they be sacred, and you know, there's ways to go about that, and a lot of it's perception. But I'll let you talk first.
Well, you know, I think this, we can both share the answer to that, because it's a challenge that we both do, and to some degree of success.
Yeah, I think, well,
so
acceptance
like,
is one.
What you have to do is go back and look, well, how did I actually do that? And then you can take a relationship that you want to be sacred and say, can you change it? That's going to be your homework at the end of the show, Don.
And it's a good homework, because I think people can say that with every relationship.
Yeah.
And without a doubt that every relationship can be sacred.
Yeah.
And first it starts with knowing that every relationship can be sacred.
It starts with saying it's possible.
Right.
Possibility, like creating a vision.
Sure.
Right?
That's right.
Then the next thing is creating an intent that you want to change the relationship. Now, you know, to change a relationship, you can't make a relationship sacred out of willpower. You cannot do it. You have to become worthy. One of the things is you have to become worthy of a sacred relationship.
So now there's more conditions.
Well, something I've noticed in relationships is that oftentimes...
What if you already know you're worthy? Look, I think every single person should know they're worthy.
Well,
there's
you know
no
what?
Exception to that.
I think you're wrong. I think worthiness is one of the most challenging things. You happen to have a lot of self-esteem. Wait a second. You have a lot of self-esteem. You come from, a fairly, you know, back in your background, there's some, I know you have family things. Some of it has to do with your family upbringing. But when I've had to deal with worthiness. Even when I knew I was worthy in my mind, I could feel myself putting out a signal to the world that I wasn't. I know how it feels. And it's very hard to change that feel, that signal. You can't just tell yourself, I'm worthy.
You can. You can get up every morning and you can say to yourself, I'm worthy. And you can say, you can sing it, you can say it, you can dance it. And when you finally get it, that you are worthy, because every single soul is. Otherwise, because we're all. You've got to come, I think, from the premise that people, at this point, is that your phone?
No, that's my phone. Is my phone making static?
Yeah, I think it's a good way to come from the premise that everybody is worthy.
Yeah, and everyone is worthy, but they don't feel worthy.
Right. Well, then they can just...
If everyone felt worthy, we would all have sacred relationships around us, and our world would not be in the mess we're in.
Well, I don't know.
I think.
I feel worthy, but all my relationships aren't sacred.
Yeah.
I wish they were.
But you have some sacred relationships, right?
I believe I do.
Okay. Okay. I mean, it's not like you need a lot. You just, you know... You know, a couple is more than most, okay? Well,
right.
Look, I can tell you, I mean, I'm just going to tell you some of the things that I battled in myself in this idea of worthiness, okay? And see, this is where you and I are different, because I don't think it's been such a big issue for you. I mean, you could walk into a room, you could have all this confidence.
You really have this ideal of me that I think is erroneous.
Go back and tell me how you conquered your unworthiness. because
well,
you're saying,
I'll tell you what. When you go, look, I've went through such an extreme time in my life where I lost everything. Mm-hmm. I mean everything. And I've been through such dark times. And
dark, dark, dark.
And I have not told people. I've not told about it during my interviews on the radio, nor will I.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't feel there's certain things I want to share.
Mm-hmm.
Not with the general public at large. And these things, you know, many people go through them. Some people are lucky. They don't have to go through these very, very difficult and dark times. But
now, when you went through those dark times, did you feel unworthy, or did you feel fearful?
Yeah.
You did?
Of course.
And so, somehow, you had to change the feeling in order to recreate yourself so the times could get better, right?
And I think you do that with finding out. First, you got to ask yourself. I think that all comes in with how you interpret your life, L-I-F-E. Mm-hmm. Since you're alive, then many people interpreted that as, well, I'm going to die and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And many people interpreted it as that it's something that's eternal, and so many people take it to the next step. It's not only eternal, but it means that I'm a part of everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when you get to that stage, then I think that it's at that point you can start recognizing that, or not recognizing, but you can start taking those steps to get rid of that fear.
Mm-hmm.
Change your circumstances.
Well,
perceive things differently.
I mean, I was going to tell you one simple thing that I found that helped me, that, and that was the way you, this worked for me anyway, the way to get out of unworthiness and feelings of unworthiness is to do worthy things.
Ooh, I like that. You're right on.
You do something that really creates value for someone, and the value that you created automatically says, hey, I did that. And, you know, it's a very deep transformation that starts to take place when you start doing worthy things. Like, I remember...
Wynn, I'm going to stop you right there.
Yeah.
That was very profound. I think you're right on. And
okay.
I think that's... I can vouch for that. That's pretty much how things do change. When you start to put your next best foot forward...
Right, right.
You start, and, you know, put one foot in front of the other, and you walk right out of the crapper.
There was a time when I was playing music, and I was feeling unworthy, and I used to go around to old age homes and play for the old people. And they would love it. I mean, how could you not be loved by those people? You know, they're sitting around all day wishing for something to happen. Somebody goes in and makes them feel good. You know, I've heard people say that if you want to feel worthy, you're feeling really down and out and worthless and everything, can't get a job, this, that, and the other thing, start doing an eternal thing like that. Go to an old age home and help people write letters or sit and talk to them. You know what happens is your energy shifts because you start feeling worthy, and now you start attracting a job because people want to be around you. See, people don't want to be around you when you're feeling unworthy. And so you go looking for a job, and your head's hanging down. You can't look at people in the eye. And will you say, woe is me? Well, how are you going to find a job? You're only going to find, like, a job where you get abused.
Well, it's energy. Like energy attracts.
Yeah.
Like.
Well, this is what so many people are going through and have gone through. And, you know, it's a very hard cycle to get out of because you go around to find a job and, you know, you look unworthy, so you get an abusive boss. You go around to find a girlfriend, and you're feeling unworthy, so you get an un, you know, an abusive girlfriend or boyfriend. You know, it's like somehow or another, you have got to get out of that feeling inside of yourself and project a different energy. Now, to me, I could tell myself I am worthy all day, and it wouldn't change it. I could say it all day to myself. But if I even
well, so what you're saying is affirmations.
I'm saying affirmation didn't work for me.
Okay.
Walking out the front door, going to an old age home.
But you're not saying affirmations are not good to do.
No, I'm not saying it's not good.
Oh, good.
I mean, but I'm saying affirmation on top of taking an action that where you create value.
We agree with that completely, Wynn.
And you know what? Anyone that feels that way and starts doing a regular routine, you know, a lot of times people say, well, I don't have time to go to, I use this old age home thing, and that's only one little example, but I don't have time to do that. I need to make money. Well, what do? They sit around all day and watch TV. They're not making money. They could walk out their door and do something. I mean, they could go and give money. How can I say it? Go to Skid Row and cheer people up. God knows what. There's all kinds of stuff that needs to get done. And it's each person's creative thing to figure it out. Even with somebody they care for, that they want to change the nature of the relationship, you know, there's that saying, random acts of kindness. You know that phrase?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, random acts of kindness. Do something that's out of the box, that the person doesn't expect. And
you know, my mother used to say every day, and you know, I took this to heart for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you get up
mm-hmm.
that day, make it a mission to do something nice for somebody that's not expecting it
mm-hmm.
that day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
And really, she instilled that within us. And not that I did that when I was younger, of course. And not that I do that now all the time, unfortunately. But I do have an individual I know who's my father-in-law who goes out of his way every moment of his day. And he's a part of him now. He does it without thinking. He will just... I've never met a man like him in my life that he, no matter what, he will think of you. He's a Mother Teresa. Pure and simple. That just summed him up in every way that he could be summed up.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you do, again, like you're saying, Wynn, and I love that if you put your next best foot forward, and you take the right step with the right action, that of course you're going to change your future, because that energy that you create in those actions and positive thinking will transform your life.
Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes,
and your relationships.
Sometimes I have to make a phone call where I know I have to be on. I have to be on top of things. You ever have that experience? You know, the person's going to read your energy. And if you're not totally enthused, they're not going to respond. The chances of them responding to you are much less.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I'll say, well, this is not the right time to make that phone call because I'm going through stuff. So I'll call somebody else that I know will appreciate my phone call to say, hi, how are you doing? And just somebody hasn't heard from me for a while. And you know what? That's the act that suddenly creates me to shift my energy. So then I go make the other phone call and I'm in the right energy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's all really tricky. But the idea is, in a relation, the more relationships of grace you establish, even one relationship of grace is a precious thing. It's somebody that's going to
Well, it's all very easy. I wouldn't say it's very tricky.
I think, you know, there's a thing.
Again, it comes back to words, how you perceive things and how you think of things. If you keep boxing it into complicated words, mm-hmm. which play on you, And you keep saying, well, it's all very tricky, and let me explain it, or it's all very complex, or it's all, you know, what you really want to do is turn around and say, it's all very easy and simple, and I'm going to do it today.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's taking the complexity out of people's lives. Complexity is formed through words and thoughts and past beliefs and cherished past beliefs that have all run into your mind saying, the world's complicated.
Well,
your relationships are complicated. Everything's a mess. It's all a barrier.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that.
But often you'll say it's tricky or it's complicated. But really, life is easy. You just have to live it. You just have to love it.
Mm-hmm.
And putting the next, your next best foot forward is not complex. It's just doing it.
Well, let me say, Don, that I've had a couple times in my life where I thought I was on the top of some kind of game. And I had all these people around me that were upbeat. And you know, I was kind of in charge. And it was all kind of, how can I say it?
Upbeat and you were in charge.
Upbeat was in charge. And then when the situation fell apart, not a single person was around to pick me up off the floor. Not a single one. And it's like, you know, if somebody had asked me at the time that I was upbeat and in charge about how everything was, I'd say, life was beautiful, everybody loves me, I love everybody. And yet, in retrospect, I would say, those were not relationships of grace. They were relationships of obligation. Even, you know, there's a thing in the I Ching that says, even thieves can have close bonds. And you know, close bonds look like a lot of fun and look like everyone's having a good time. But only relationships that are based on the highest truth endure beyond the common interest. So, you know, if you really want to look and take your relationships apart and say, you have to ask yourself, would this relationship last beyond the common interest? In other words, beyond the fact that
beyond the obligation.
Beyond the obligation. I mean, beyond the marriage. I mean, is there a relationship here that goes, that's eternal? And that's what a sacred relationship is. I remember there was a guy that once said that when he chooses his friends, he says, I think of them, do I want to be in the trench with them? You know, if I was in a war, is that the person I'd want next to me in the trenches? And that's a good way to, you know, it's a good test of your relationship. And think, who in your life would be covering you as much as covering themselves if they were in the trenches with you?
Sure, there are a lot of people that, you know, you're going to meet so many different people with so many different attractions to you or repulsions. And, you know, I think there's very few people you can count on when you get into the trenches.
That's right.
And unfortunately, that's the case. But again, like you say, it is possible to move relationships into the sacred arena. And I think a way to do that is to know that you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you again, like you're saying, take those relationships and say, is this a relationship? You look at the key factors that are making that relationship what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you'll come to some conclusion as to does it benefit you? Doesn't it? What does that mean? What doesn't it mean? Can this grow into something more? Can't it? Why?
There's one simple attribute of a relationship of grace. Really simple. You know what that is?
Freedom.
Freedom is one thing, but no, there's one quality. Can you look at that person and perceive them as part of God, as part of everything, and as part of yourself? You have to imagine it, like in your mind, or can you actually see it?
Good. Yeah. Okay? That's a toughie. I mean,
Now, at the point you can do that, then you have succeeded in, I mean, you may not make the person ever know that you're seeing that, because that's something that's up to their free will to share that.
Yeah.
But that's how you're going to give somebody the opportunity.
Yeah.
Are you seeing them as somebody that's going to fulfill some desire of you, some goal of yours? And are you using them as part of that?
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah. And
so with 2000X fast approaching us, Wynn, and a lot of listeners on here tonight, I'm quite amazed.
We do?
If I'd have known we'd had so many listeners, I would have said, Wynn, we got to talk about something else. But
well, if you didn't tell me, I would have gotten nervous.
We got a lot of listeners tonight, and I want to thank you all for listening, because it is New Year's, and I know you have families that are near and dear to you, and you'll be celebrating tonight, hopefully with some family around you and those that you love, and we're entering into a wonderful new year, and I just wanted to ask you, Wynn, what do you think is the most important things that you'd like to convey to people as they enter into this new next year? What are the five most important things you think?
You're asking me that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, actually, somebody has sent me an email, and they didn't really send this out as New Year's resolution, but it had 20 things on it, which I thought were great in terms of thinking about how to change your life, and how to change the people around you. In fact, it fits into our conversation. I'm just opening up my computer.
Okay.
So that I'll read these things. I'll read them slowly. You can make a comment on them. I think I can almost agree with every one, and yet they're not so obvious. They're kind of subtle. So while my computer's opening up, I have a joke. Are you ready?
I'm always ready for your jokes.
This is a bad one. this was sent to me. I forget who sent it to me. I'm sorry, I can't give you credit if you're listening. An elderly couple had dinner at another couple's house. And after eating, the wives left the table and went into the kitchen. The two elderly gentlemen were talking, and one said, "Last night we went out to a new restaurant, and it was really great. I would recommend it highly." The other man said, "So what's the name of the restaurant?" The first man thought and pondered and finally said, "Hey, what's the name of the flower you give to someone you love? You know, the one that's red and has thorns?" And the other guy says, "Do you mean a rose?" "Yes," the man said, "that's the flower." Then he turned towards the kitchen and yelled, "Rose, what's the name of that restaurant we went to last night?"
That's it. We're changing the name of our show, folks. It's going to be called Bad Jokes on the Air.
All right. My computer's still opening up.
No, I don't know where you get your jokes. I promise you. I mean, I love you, Wynn, but
I'm not going to be a comedian, right?
Well, it's not that you're not funny. It's just that you get the worst joke sent to you. Or you, I don't... You know, I got to tell you.
No, I like that joke. Okay, listen. You guys that are listening, why don't you like
send us
vote? Yes or no on the joke.
If the audience really wants to help us out here, please.
Email Don and say you like Wynn's jokes.
Send Wynn some new jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some good ones. Wynn@bloginservice.com. I mean, just start sending them. I mean, now, if you like his jokes, send them an email, say, "I love them." But if you're like me, and they're really, I don't get them.
You don't get it, huh?
Oh, well, it's like what was the last joke you said?
What's the octopus? This is an original now. This is not one that somebody sent me. What's an octopus's favorite gospel song?
Oh, yeah, I love that one.
Oh, you like that one?
I love that one I love.
Okay, well, why don't you tell the answer?
Put your hand in the hand in the hand in the hand.
In the hand in the hand of the man, the quest. You got to count your hands.
Okay? That one I liked. That was the first joke you ever told me, though.
Well, least I started on a good foot. I almost have this. Okay, I got it. All right, I got my computer open. So these are like 21 things, and any one of these could be a New Year's resolution. All right, and I'll say each one, Don, and you can tell me if you go along with it or not. Okay?
All right. Okay.
And I didn't put these together, so it's not like I have a vested interest in it. Somebody sent it to me, but I thought they were very good. So number one was give people more than they expect and do it cheerfully.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Number two, marry a man, woman you love to talk to. As you get older, their conversational skills will be as important as any other.
I think that's quite important.
You shouldn't just marry them for good sex, right, Don?
Well, I mean, originally maybe that might be the case.
Three, don't believe all you hear, spend all you have, or sleep all you want.
There's a punchline, right?
No, that's it. This is a... we'll leave that one, okay? Go on. This one, I think...
I can just picture you now in a classroom. You're teaching fourth graders, and you just read them that.
Now, Don, this one I'm going to say to you, okay? This is number four. You ready?
Okay.
When you say, I love you, mean it.
Absolutely.
When you say, I'm sorry, look the person in the eye. Now, here's a good one. Be engaged at least 6 months before you get married. Of course, they don't say how long you should know somebody before you have sex.
Yeah.
That's probably individual circumstance. Believe in love at first sight. Never laugh at anyone's dream. People who don't have dreams don't have much. Love deeply and passionately. You might get hurt, but it's the only way to live life completely. In disagreement, fight fairly. No name calling.
No eye gouging.
Don't judge people by their relatives.
Especially not their mother-in-laws.
And we should take this moment to say hello to your mother, shouldn't we? Is she listening?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. She may very well be listening.
Well, hello, Mrs. Newsom. We love you.
Hi, Mom.
Talk slowly, but think quickly. When someone asks you a question you don't want to answer, smile and ask, why do you want to know? Remember that great love and great achievement involve great risk. Now, this next one here, I don't know how it got here, but I'll say it anyway. Whoever put this list together, this seems to be much more mundane than the others. Say bless you when you hear someone sneeze. When you lose, don't lose the lesson. Remember the three R's: respect for self, respect for others, and responsibility for your actions. Don't let a little dispute injure a great friendship. When you realize you've made a mistake, take immediate steps to correct it. Smile when picking up the phone. The caller will hear it in your voice. That was number 20 and number 21. Spend some time alone. And that's it.
Well, I've got one.
There's some good ones in there. They're not all...
They're good ones.
They're not all as equal, but there's some there that are great.
But we all know that there are those in our lives that we have ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And as we come into the new year and we think about that, and I do because I'm so busy, wrapped up into what I'm doing, that I often, you know, there are certain people in my life that I've ignored, and family, friends, neighbors, loved ones. And we all know who those individuals are when we sit down and think about it for a bit. Maybe as we come into this new year, we might want to give those people a call and just let them know we're thinking about them, and that we'll make a better effort in the new year to be a part of their lives and to have them a part of ours. Because, you know, so many of the families today have been, many families, and I'm not saying all of them, but many tend to be very split apart because of the way the political, economic, and social systems are today and are in place, that often enough it's separated us. And if it's not in distance, it's often in our thoughts. And I think when it comes to family, friends, and loved ones, again, like Wynn said, they're so, I mean, it's hard to find those that you can easily overcome those obligations and shortcomings, and you can see beyond that. And
you know, Don, I wanted to share something with you.
Mm-hmm.
It just relates to this. When I was younger, I used to visit some of my relatives, and I hadn't seen them for a long time. And I go and visit them, and the first thing they would say is, "How come you haven't been around? Where have you been?" And so we dwell on that for an hour, and then I didn't want to see them again, because I said, every time I see them, they're going to...
Yeah.
See, this is where it gets screwed up. They're going to expect that I'm going to see them too much, or they're going to say, "Where have I been?" But I happen to call... I have one aunt. That I believe she's 90 years old. She lives by herself, and she cooks dinner. I mean, she is sharp. And I haven't called her for years and years and years. And basically, probably I didn't call her because, of course, they're all going to say, "Well, what are you doing?" And I couldn't really tell her anything that I could sense that she would feel good about. But then when I had my book kind of come out, I had an excuse to call her because I was doing something that she would relate to being proud of. So I called her, and we have had the most greatest conversation. And I don't censor myself. I used to think I have to act like in such a way. I tell her, she says, "What are you doing?" I say, "Well, I'm talking to these guys on the other side through my girlfriends." And then she laughs, and then I says, "Well, you know, Joanne had a miracle." And then she laughs again. I said, "Check it out, you know." So, you know, but it doesn't matter. She doesn't have to believe me. I can tell it to her. And she's so glad that I'm staying in touch. And I can actually feel her energy in between phone calls. I don't talk to her for a couple of weeks. I can sense that just because I called her, I changed something in her energy pattern. Now, you know, this is another criteria that I have. You know, Don, that you mentioned this, and it's really true. I do this, and other people can do it, but it's like when we have an energy connection, it's really an indication of a relationship of grace, because it's not based on what we're doing. It's based on, you know, you said during the week that you can feel me in between, at least when you're not mad at me, right?
Yeah, well, that's right.
You know, and I can feel you.
Yeah, well, I was saying to Wynn the other day that on the phone, I said, "It's funny, Wynn, because all during my day I feel your energy around me." Yeah. And when I talk to you on the phone or when you hang up, it feels like we're just right here in the same room and the energy is just there. And it's like that for me. So it was kind of an interesting call Wynn and I had, because I meant what I said, and I still do. It just feels like his energy is just here.
I can feel you feeling me. I can feel me feeling you. You know, in my criteria, it's because we set up, you know, in my, cosmology, you and I both exist on the other side. And when you start to create a relationship of grace, you start to make ties in the other dimension with the other person, kind of a communing of your energy. And it's real.
I agree.
And that stays. And, you know, it's a wonderful thing, because then you don't get lonely. You just feel people. you feel like you're with everybody.
That's right.
And you don't need, you know, to have to, you know, it's not based on what you're doing in the physical. And then if you go do something in the physical, it works so much better because you already have this inner connection. And, you know, that's the goal of what I'm attempting to do on those conferences.
Oh, that you know, and I love that idea, Wynn, because is that people getting into these conference calls that you're talking about and sharing with each other and building that sort of a network, a bonding network between each other. I think that's vital as we
right.
march into this, especially in 2006.
Yeah, I mean, this is the time to build those spiritual connections, which will be so important if the world starts to fall apart.
And it's going to get a little crazy.
The conference call, and I'm saying, I have a vision. I don't know if it's going to happen according to my vision or not, but my vision is that so many people, there's an energy in those calls. There's a magic in them. It's not just me talking. It's kind of like an AA, spiritual AA meeting, so to speak. And I have these group souls that I believe are working and helping the energy of the conference calls. And there's an opportunity. There's people that have been checking in every week, strangers, and they're starting to get to know each other and look forward to it.
Well, tell the audience a little bit how they can participate.
Yeah, well, just email me at win@login service, and I'll give you the number to call. And if we make this work, it'll happen every day. And when people are going through stuff, there'll be some place for them to call to get re-energized, feel part of something. The worst thing that a person can do is go through what I call their dark night and have no one to turn to.
And folks, 2006, and I'm not much of a predictor, and I don't like to make predictions, and I hate to tell people that things are going to be difficult, and I just don't like to spread that kind of fear and anger, even though, of course, a lot of what Blogging Service does, people take it as that because it's putting the truth in front of them, and then, of course, many other people's opinions. But, you know, it's 2006 is going to be a year where many of the energies are vortexing. And in other words, they're coalescing, they're starting to form into certain patterns, and those patterns are going to manifest themselves because those energies have taken shape. And by that I mean that if you just, and I don't know how to explain that any better than that, but I feel that, and I feel that these energy vortexes are going to be touching down, and there's going to be a certain amount of chaos and a mess that's going to, and really, that it's a good thing. If you look at that, you can just know that things are changing. Change is great. And the greater the change on the other end of the spectrum, the more chaotic it's going to be perceived to be. So this year is going to be a year of significant change. And I truly and absolutely feel it. I know it in my being. And it's going to be tremendous change for many. And some are going to coast right through it, no matter what happens. And a lot of those people are going to have spiritual support networks. And those that, can become a part of those networks and build those networks up with others that share, they can share their energy, they can share their problems, they can share their understandings and awareness. Those people are not only going to, I think, find it a little easier, but it's going to help build that energy and sustain it and ground it. And I think it's extremely important that we do that coming into this year because of the type of year that this is going to be for all of us.
Mm-hmm. It's important that people get enough spiritual muscle and support and strength so that
yes.
when things fall apart, they don't fall apart, because this is the time that each person has the opportunity to be of greater service than they ever imagined. And it's being able to hold steady so that the people around you can hold steady because you are. And that's the way it'll work.
That's the way it'll work.
And if each person that's listening here, we hope to give you the tools and the support. You have to do it yourself, of course, but, you know, I'm just one guy, Don's just one guy, but nonetheless, I am trying to figure out circumstances that if you're a person that is centered and steady and doesn't need support, then come and give support. Be part of our conference calls, and we're going to put teams of two people together to do their own, so as more people need help, they can find support every night of the week.
Yeah. And this is so important. I believe you, because I just, I feel what's coming.
Yeah.
And it's going to be...
This is like the time to walk your talk.
Really, yeah. Sitting on the fence is over.
If you need help, then get support. Don't be so proud that you don't reach out and get support. If you don't need help, give support. And if you have, you know, you do all those things, and you're going to feel worthy, you're going to feel valued, and you're going to attract the attention and the support of the other side just as well.
Well, that's exactly bringing around full circle what you were talking about with mm-hmm. relationships. It's putting your next foot forward, your best foot forward, mm-hmm. and building those sacred relationships that everyone can benefit from, everyone, and for the highest good of all that are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, folks, this is going to be an I hate to use weird words here, but it's going to be a rush. 2006 is going to be a year that, for many, they're going to find the darkest nights they've ever had. And for many, they're going to, you know, find more within them than they ever thought they could or ever thought they would. So it's going to be a challenging one. It's going to be an interesting one. And it's going to be one of great reward.
You know, one of the things that Ra said, this is quoted in my book, and you know, for those of you who don't know who Ra, I believe, is the major oversoul that's working with our planet, and that they said that they have done many interventions and miracles thus far, and the more that we have love and wisdom, the more they have permission to do. See, they don't violate free will. So the more of us that can tune into the higher energy, can keep our hearts open, can keep our love open, and make our own direct connection with the higher forces. And making a direct connection doesn't mean you have to talk to them. It means that you can open your chakras and feel their presence. And that changes everything around you. It's even more important than having a voice in your head or channeling. More important.
Way more important. You're right on.
Your energy.
Just because you can't channel or you can't hear the spirits or you don't see strange things or you don't feel that you're psychic or clairvoyant or a metaphysicist or intuitive person or anything, you know, really that's not the issue. It's not the point, and that you should be totally and absolutely leaving in the background. Those things come. But you're right, Wynn, that really what's important is to share those energies and to get yourself spiritually prepared.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, for those of you that doubt, and I don't blame you, it's natural to doubt, especially if you haven't had a personal experience. For those of you that doubt that it works this way, I will tell you, there's things study and read that will convince you that it's true. My book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, Carla Ruckert's website, llresearch.org, it's all posted. We're trying to bring those things forward because this is not a matter of the evangelical Don and Wynn hour. We're bringing forth not only the wisdom and the knowledge of these sources, but enough data that if you study it, you'll know that it's real, and you'll increase your chances that you'll make your own connection. There's my website, conversationswithmygirlfriend.com, which is, these are, everything we have that we think of as value is posted on the page of the Don and Wynn Show. And
that's right. Well,
please take your time and study these things and read them, and because particularly channeled material carries the energy and the vibration of the source, not the person that channeled it, but the source on the other side. So it's kind of like you start to get a resonance with those sources. It helps you tune into their energy.
Yeah.
And there's a huge amount of them that are wanting, they want you to tune in. They want to give support. And all you have to do is reach for it. And look, and you'll get some kind of validation.
You know, we must have a lot of Dr. Bell listeners right now, so...
No wonder we have so many people.
Yeah.
Get those guys off the air.
It's starting to shoot up, and I'm going, I'm looking at the clock, and I'm saying, oh, must be Dr. Bell's time. You know, for all you Dr. Bell listeners, he's going to be on here in the next few moments. We're going to wrap this up so that he can do his show. But and I apologize for going a little overboard. It's again, I wasn't really thinking, and I'm just I've been talking away and enjoying myself so much. Wynn does that to me, folks. He kind of carries me into the next dimension, and I lose track of time. And to you, Dr. Bell, we'll have you on shortly. I know you're listening, and know I love you, and please forgive me, and make sure Guido doesn't bang open my door this time, folks.
So Don, listen. Let's finish up. Let me just call in the light.
But I want to, before we do that, I just want to say one thing to our listeners. You know, we hear a blog and service, all of us. And believe me, because you wouldn't think all these show hosts know each other, but many of them do. And many of them talk to each other. We've all become a very, I would like to think, a tight-knit group of people that truly, and I mean truly, care about you and what happens to you, and about helping uplift yourselves, ourselves, and this planet as we gain momentum into this ascension process. And we truly do love you. And if we do anything right, please let us know. And if we do anything wrong that you don't agree with, or you find challenging, or that you have question about, please let us know. We're going to take your questions, comments.
If they want to tell us that we did anything wrong, tell them to listen to Rush Limbaugh.
No, but I'm serious. We love to have your comments and your criticisms and your feedback, because it helps us be more, I guess, lucid and fluid with what our listeners and our audience is thinking. And
it creates more of an energetic connection between us and them.
Well, exactly.
You know that?
So, thank you. Thank you all. We wish you all the happiest of New Year's. We're going to close as Wynn calls in the light, which is something we do on every program. And I just...
Don, did you get that transcript that Karen did on Carla Rucker?
Karen from Ohio.
Yeah, Karen.
Boy, I love that lady.
she takes up 22 pages.
She's amazing. She's
Carla
always
Rucker interview.
Amazing girl.
And, we have it there to be listened to, but we can post the... I sent it to you, so we can post that.
Okay.
I really urge those of you that didn't hear the interview, and even those of you that did, there's so much wisdom in what came through in that interview that I hope you read it.
Okay? Yes.
All 22 pages. So on that note, Father, Mother, God, I ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person here, each person listening, and take any negativity and release it into the higher realm of light. I ask for the presence of those interdimensional sources, those angelic sources, who have personally identified themselves to me, who are service to others, working in the Christed energies, presence, and I ask that each of you can have some touch and experience of an upliftment of that energy in your face right now, and that you can experience that there is a radiation coming from the center of the galaxy that's radiating through your body, the center of the Earth, and that you are walking in light. And that energy may uplift all those people around you. May it bring healing to those that need healing. May it bring you the opportunity that you need to fulfill yourself and the abundance that you need to fulfill yourself. And may each of you have the, I'm losing my words, have the courage and strength to stand in the light over the next period of time, regardless of what's happening in the outer world. Thank you. Thank you, Don, for giving us both the opportunity to do this.
Thank you, Wynn, for allowing me to be of service. Thank you. You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.